1 Kings chapter 20, and we'll begin reading at verse 38 and then read through verse 43, the remainder of the chapter. Then we'll go back and look at some of the context from which this particular text comes, and then try to focus on some particular lessons for us. 1 Kings chapter 20, began reading at verse 38. So the prophet departed and waited for the king by the way, and disguised himself with ashes upon his face. And as the king passed by, he cried unto the king and said, "Thy servant went out into the midst of the battle, and behold, a man turned aside and brought a man," that is, one soldier brought a prisoner, a soldier of the other side, and he said, "Keep this man. If by any means he be missing, then shall thy life be for his life, or else thou shalt pay a talent of silver. And as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone." And the king of Israel said to him, "So shall thy judgment be. Thyself hast decided it." And he hastened, took the ashes away from his face. And the king of Israel discerned him that he was of the prophets. And he said unto him, that is, the prophet said unto the king, "Thus saith the Lord, because thou hast let go out of thy hand a man whom I appointed to utter destruction, therefore thy life shall go for his life, and thy people for his people." And the king of Israel went to his house heavy and displeased, and came to Samaria. Now, we're not told the name of the prophet in this, but the king of Israel at this particular time that's involved was King Ahab. You remember Ahab and his wife Jezebel have one of the more infamous legacies in the New Testament in terms of the way they were recognized. They were among the more sinful individuals, the more idolatrous individuals. And it was Ahab that traveled to Syria and saw a different altar. And he came back and gave orders that the Lord's altar be removed and another one be set up of a different kind. He led the people further and further into idolatry. There is another king who is a central figure in this whole story. And that man's name is Ben-Hadad. He is the king of Syria. And he was not exactly a good king either. There are several things that we're told about him. But Ben-Hadad threatened Ahab and the people of Israel. He came to them and he pitched his camp against them. And he told Ahab that Ahab was to give him access. "I want your wives and your children and the most goodly things that you have." Well, now that's a rather brazen demand to make of somebody you haven't conquered yet. They had pitched in siege against the town, but Ahab, rather than taking time to fight, he just folded and capitulated and said, "Okay, I'll agree to that." Well, that wasn't enough for Ben-Hadad. He comes back and he said, "No, I'm going to send my captains and my leaders in, and they're going to go through everything you've got and they'll take whatever they want." And by this time, Ahab talks to some other leaders in Israel and, "No, we can't have that." And he, "No, We're not going there. I agreed to the other, but we're not going to do that. Well, Ben-Hadad made even bolder statements. And if you look in verse 11, Ahab told them to answer Ben-Hadad. He said, "Let not him that girdeth on his harness boast himself as he that putteth it off." Don't start your bragging before the fight. Don't tell me what you're going to do. Don't boast about it until you've done it. Well, it came to pass that the Lord sent a prophet to Ahab. If you look in verse 13, "Behold, there came a prophet unto Ahab, king of Israel, saying, Thus saith the Lord." Now remember, Ahab was the king of Israel, but Ahab was not a faithful man and an obedient servant to the Lord. But he was the king of God's covenant people. And the Lord sent word to Ahab, "Thus saith the Lord, hast thou seen all this great multitude, all the army that had been spread out there against him? I will deliver it into thy hand this day, and thou shalt know that I am the Lord." Okay? You've got an adversary, Ahab, and they look pretty foreboding and forbidding, but I'm going to deliver all of them into your power. Well, he did. The army of the Syrians were defeated, and those that escaped went back home. And when they got back home, they said, "Ben-Hadad, king, look, the God of the Israelites down there, he was the God of the hills. And we were fighting in the hills. Let's get up another army and we'll go back and we'll fight them on the plain. We'll fight them on the flatland, and our gods are the God of the flatland, and we'll win that battle." Well, notice with me verse 20. "And the prophet came unto the king of Israel and said unto him, Go strengthen thyself and mark and see what thou doest, for at the return of the year the king of Syria will come up against thee." Okay? Now God told him that ahead of time. Verse 28. "And there came a man of God and spake unto the king of Israel, Thus saith the Lord, Because the Syrians have said, The Lord is God of the hills, but He is not God of the valleys. Therefore will I deliver all this great multitude into thine hand, and ye shall know that I am the Lord." Okay, because they are drawing me into a box, I'm going to prove to them that I'm not in the box they think I'm in. I'm going to turn them into your care. You'll notice that God delivered this army twice into the power and to the hand of Ahab. Even though Ahab was ungodly, it was the boastfulness and the arrogance and the sinfulness of Ben-Hadad that God delivered to prove God's own glory. God didn't deliver Ahab because Ahab deserved it. God delivered Ben-Hadad into Ahab's hand because Ben-Hadad had no honor of God. They say, "I'm the God of the hills and not the God of the valley." The gospel group known as the McCameys came out with a song based on this particular story a number of years ago. "The God of the mountain is the God of the valleys." And God said, "I'm going to prove that truth. I'm going to deliver him into your hand." They came back. God delivered the army into Ahab's hands again. Ben-Hadad and a few of his leaders got away. they hid, and then the leaders said, well, you know, we've heard that the Israelites are a merciful people. Let's go to them, and maybe they'll let us go home. So they disguised themselves, and they went to Ahab and told him, asked for mercy. Ahab said, what about my brother Ben-Hadad? Now, obviously there was a family kinship somewhere. The term that's used as brother doesn't always mean sibling, but it does mean family. And so there was some kind of a family connection, and Ahab told him, he said, now, Ben-Hadad, you go on home and be good. Ben-Hadad said, well, I'll give you back the cities that my dad took from your country. And Ahab let him go home. Now, God had said, I'm going to deliver this man to you to be destroyed because he doubts me. He and his entire army. That they may know, and in turn that you may know, that the God of the hills is the God of the valley. Now, Ahab didn't do that. This prophet goes to someone and said, punch me. And he wouldn't do it, so he went to somebody else and he says, punch me. He wanted to be bruised up. He wanted to be beaten. And then he covered his face with ashes as a man that was mourning. And he goes to the king, goes where the king's passing by, and he tells this story. King, I was out there at the battle, and one of the soldiers brought me a prisoner. And he said, you keep this man, and you keep him at the... If you let him go, if he gets away from you, your life is going to be required for this one. And the king says, okay, you let him get away. And then he revealed who he was. And basically, God said to Ahab, I delivered a prisoner into your hands, and it was for his utter destruction. His and the nation of Syria. They were adversaries. Syria was a threat to the nation of Israel. And God delivered that adversary into his hands. And so God said, you let him go. It will be at the cost of your life and the destruction of your people. Now, when you read that, that sounds like, well, that's a story of old history. We don't fight wars like that anymore. We don't have kings like that anymore. We're not in that position that Ahab was. So that really doesn't have anything to do with us. But I'm going to tell you there are at least three different lessons from this particular story. First of all, there is a warning against boastfulness. Ben-Hadad was a man who was subject to his own ego. And he was a man who boasted and made demands based on what he thought he could do. There's an interesting description that's given to him when all of the, or given about him when all of this was going on. He was in a tent drinking himself drunken along with his captains. There is an interesting statement that's made in the book of Proverbs. Wine is said to be a thing of joy to the Lord. But it's also said to be a mocker. The book of Proverbs, Solomon records that wine is a mocker and strong drink is raging. And he that is fooled thereby is not wise. He was making himself drunken, and in his drunkenness, his boastful mouth was just running away. verse that we've used many times before, but I'll use it again tonight. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18. Pride goeth before destruction. What was it that God said He delivered Ben-Hadad into Ahab's hands for? He delivered him for utter destruction. What was it that went before that delivery for utter destruction? It was Ben-Hadad's pride and a haughty spirit before the fall. Folks, God still judges pride. One of the biggest and most grievous things to me in watching much of our culture, for that matter, but particularly athletes, young athletes, even in school, they want you to know how great they are. They are the best thing since sliced bread, and if you don't believe it, just ask them. They'll tell you. And when they do what they're supposed to do, they'll dance around and show you. And if you listen to interviews, they'll tell you before they do anything. And that's exactly what Ben-Hadad was doing. And that pride was the reason for his delivery. Oh, my God's better than your God. We were fighting on your turf. Next time we'll fight on my turf. And I'll show you whose God is best. Okay. God said, I'll play that game. They're going to come back, Ahab, and when they do, I'm going to deliver them into your hand. And I'm going to deliver them into your hand for you to destroy Ben-Hadad and his army because of his boastfulness. Also because of his idolatry. You see, folks, the God of the hills won that battle. Our God is the God of... You see, when you limit God and you set something up to be greater than Him, you're walking in sheer idolatry. When you demean God and give something else His glory, God will not share His glory. And so the judgment was for his boastfulness and for his idolatry. I'm going to deliver him so he will know and you will know that I'm the God of the valleys and the hills. I'm the God overall. God was manifesting his own glory. Now look, Ahab was a man who had something given into his hand. I want to ask you a question tonight. You may have never have had a prisoner delivered into your hand. Okay. I never have either. But let me ask you this. What has God put into your hands? What blessing has God given to you that is yours to use to His glory? What is it that God has given to you that by your having it, He intends for others to know that He is God? What is it that God has placed into your hands? Because anything you have that's worthwhile, you have it because God put it there. So you see, brothers and sisters, every one of us, while we're not in the situation of a battle and we're not in the situation of a prisoner, all of us are the recipients of God's blessing. Now, let me ask you, what do you do with it? What is it that we do with that blessing? There's two things that I would share with you tonight in this particular idea. The first one is found in Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, verse 48. Jesus was telling a parable. And of the parable, there was a servant that didn't do what he was supposed to have done. And Jesus makes the statement, I'll read verses 47 and 48. That servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. You see, there's a principle that Jesus had given in terms of a parable for those, the contrast between two servants, one who knew what he was supposed to be doing and didn't do his job, and one who didn't do anything because he didn't know he was supposed to do it. Now folks, I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of us fall into the category at one time or another in our lives that we failed simply because of a lack of knowledge and a lack of understanding of what God would have us do. Oh, how merciful is our Lord who said such a man would be beaten with few stripes. But the man who knew what he was supposed to do, who had been told what he ought to do, but who didn't prepare himself to do it and didn't do it, he would be beaten with many stripes, because he who to whom much is given, much is required. Victory was placed in Ahab's hands, and obedience in the destroying of the enemy was required of him. He didn't do it. Okay, now folks, what about us? What about the things in our lives that we know what God says and we don't do them? We choose not to do what God has told us to do. To whom much is given, much shall be required. You see, beloved, the lesson of this is when God gives something into our hands for the purpose of His glory, that's why He delivered Ben-Hadad into Ahab's hands, that His glory would be known. When God puts a skill, when God puts a gift, when God puts something in our life, that's to be for His glory. His glory's amplification is what is required of us. You see, if we choose to let it go and to disregard the glory of God, then we will be held accountable for not using what God has given us to glorify Him. The principle is, to whom much is given, much shall be required. God requires of us. I think of the passage in the book of Micah. He hath showed thee, O man, what is good. And what doth the Lord suggest that you do? That's not the way it's written. He hath showed thee, O man, what is good in God's sight. This is what is good. And what doth the Lord require of thee? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. You see, you can't boast like Ben-Hadad and walk humbly before God. An humble spirit is required of us. Doing justly, doing what is right in God's sight is required of us, because it manifests he who is wise and establishes what is right. Walking in mercy before others is required of us. But you see, to whom much is given, when we're given the opportunity to serve God, when we're brought from condemnation and set free and brought into His family and called into His service and given the opportunity to raise His glory when we don't do it. God holds us accountable because there is a requirement for us. You see, our boastfulness in our own ability will bring us to a fall. Our elevating anything to the level of God, whether it's us, whether it's some skill that we have, whether it's some job that we hold, whether it's some fortune we amass, whether it's family relationship, and we let them go. Sometimes people have been guilty over the years of not teaching their children to do what the Lord said they ought to do because the kids fuss too much when you made them do it. And yet here was Ahab that let Ben-Hadad go because he was a family member. He put family above what God said. We may not fight in a battle. We may not be given charge of prisoners. But I'll tell you, beloved, we're given responsibility by God to use the things that He's given to us for His glory. The question becomes, do we? I'll rephrase that question the only way that I can legitimately ask the question. Do I? To whom much is given, much is required. Failure to give God glory will bring damage and destruction. May we remember that in this era of time and where more and more loudly people holler that their gods are greater than our God. May we stand in the God that is the God of the hills and the valleys and God over all. Lord, Thou art the God of the mountains. You are the God of the valleys. You are the God of the Syrians. You're the God over the Israelites. You're the God of the Gentiles. You're the God in this world. Help us, O Lord, not to boast in our own abilities, but to trust in Yours. And when You give us blessing, may we use it to Your glory, is my prayer, for Jesus' name's sake.